JC has the recording going. We'll go ahead and get started. Welcome all of you to our steering committee meeting this Wednesday, June 11th, 2025. It is 12:34, and we would like to begin with introductions. So we'll go around the room, starting with Stephanie.
Who has her mouth full? Stephanie Hill, Iron County School District.
I waited for that, yes.
Jen Wong, HR Director for the AMG.
JC Fennicum, Administrative Assistant for the AMG.
Darth Green, Mayor of Cedar City.
Allison McCoy, CFO for the AOG.
Terry Shanlaw, Deputy Director, as well as the Director of Aging Services for Clyde County.
Nanette Billings, Mayor in Hurricane.
Celeste Myers, Kane County Commissioner.
Kyle Goldie, Mayor of Porterville.
Gil Holmquist, Commissioner, Washington County.
Wade Hawkshead, Commissioner, Beaver County.
Tyler Fells, Beaver County School Board.
Jerry Taylor, Garfield County Commissioner.
Melanie Ferguson, Mayor of Escalante City.
Paul Cousins, Iron County Commissioner.
Harris Barney, Garfield School Board.
With the Department of Workforce Services.
Amy Graff, Service Area Director for Department of Workforce Services.
Woody Hutchinson, Clyde County AOG.
Kim Cooper, Clyde County Director of Community Action Partnership.
And we have some online. Looks like we have a couple. Cindy?
Yes. Bullock. Cindy Bullock from Celeste Malloy. I'm from Celeste Malloy's office.
And Henry?
Hello, everyone. Henry Walton, Utah Tech University.
And we have others on. Is that it?
No, that's better.
All right. Very good. We'll go ahead and I'll lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance and we're going to stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We're on agenda item number 3. We need to review and approve the draft minutes from April 9th, 2025.
I will make a motion to approve the minutes for April 2025.
Moved by Mayor Billings.
Second
by Commissioner Hollingshead. Is there any discussion on the minutes? Not all those in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. We'll go to number 4. Fiscal year 2025 final budget revisions for fiscal year 2026 budget. Allison.
We need to open a public hearing.
You want to talk about it first, or do you just do
we just need to open the public hearing
first?
Yeah, first, and then after we can close the public hearing when either and approve it. So open.
So, Chair will declare an open public hearing for the budget, to discuss the budget. Is there anyone here that would like to make a comment on the budget? If seeing none, we'll close the public hearing and we'll be over from there.
Thank you. Okay. So, the first one is the final budget revisions for FY2025. And this is our forecast for the end of this year, FY2025. We started with 55 separate funds. Some of them are within the same grants from different people, but there's 55 funds that we work with. 8 of those funds were closed during the fiscal year 2025 with smaller amounts than that was budgeted. And so that left us 47 funds. And then the administration fund, that's 48 funds. So as you can see on the first page, the consolidated budget, we started with the $14,086,779. Our net change to the budget was $413,002. So our final budget forecast is $13,673,77. And I hope that we all received this budget prior to this meeting and that you were able to go through it. And if there's any questions, I will entertain those questions about the budget, the final FY2025 budget.
So when you turn that page, you see that part of the budget is upside down. I'm kidding. That's just
I really made sure that you just turned the page and you could see it.
No, you've done great. You've done great.
That got me for a minute. Okay. So I don't know if you're interested in the grants that closed, or I have that information, but.
You mean the grants that are no longer available?
Well, that's what I meant, that were closed during the year or that were.
Tell us about them.
Okay. Will do. Okay, so TFAP was one of them, which was the pantry in Hurricane, and that was purchased by the Utah Food Bank. So that grant was no longer in our purview. 51 was closed, which was the VITA grant that was finished through the season, and then that was not renewed. The VITA grant.
What is the VITA grant?
Oh, the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't award it to us for the next year, for the coming year. We've had that for a few years.
Does that normally cover the property tax for individuals?
No, it's for individual tax returns. We assist low-income people in doing their taxes.
To do what?
Yes, to actually file their taxes. And then 61. We'll get to 61.
You'll give us a page number.
Yes, I know. Street Safety for All, page number 49. That was the transportation grant that we got through the federal highways at the county. The county, I think it's called COG, right? County of Government. Uh-huh. I helped with that. It was also
GTAP, where they do it, but
right. But that was completed and finished with a lower budget than we had anticipated. The next one, 67, is page 51. That's critical housing repair. That was worked on through the year, and then it is not coming back this next year. That was through, I believe, a state funding through the Olin Walker. That one, and then the next one is 69, which is also the single, is page 52. Single Family Home Revolving Program. That really never got off the ground, and it was $7,000 was that amount.
What was that grant for?
It was to help with single family home.
I think he said it on his phone. He doesn't have that grant.
If we receive the grant, and we're not using it, the question is what. Do we just, why is it held, or do we return it?
So we still have.
Well, I was, Scott told me that they weren't doing that again.
It got renewed. It's a single family housing revolving home. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Single family home revolving program.
It got renewed.
Okay.
The issue is it's really restrictive on its parameters. It's a low and moderate income program. It can only be used for new construction.
And construction for what?
For land purchase. And it can, but it can't be used in like Singapore City.
Rural.
Yeah, rural. So And I forward it to people. I forward it to some realtors, some loan companies that ask about it. But nobody's got back to me on it.
What does it cover?
It's like a down payment assistance.
Okay.
So it covers that. It's a zero interest loan, and there's no payment. There's no monthly payment. It's only paid back if they sell the home or refinance. It was to help low and moderate income people to get into a new home or purchase land for a new home. There's no monthly payment, so it doesn't count against their payment.
But is it state funding?
It is state funding.
I mean, here's my feedback. I hope this is the appropriate time for it, Chair. Is the fact that we're the steering committee and we have any idea what this is and how it could be implemented means that we're not able to do a good job of letting our constituents know that that's available.
Yeah, it was set aside from the legislature 2 years ago, and it was passed to all the AOGs.
And how would you know that?
That's a small amount of money.
No, to do anything. We have.
That just operate.
We have 75,000 employees.
Are you talking about the grant that was in the CAP program?
Oh, no, this might be a different. This might be different. We might be talking about two different things.
This one has $7,362 and there's still $7,362.
That's a different program.
Yeah, I think.
What I'm talking about is the revolving home loan program that we got.
This is called single family revolving.
Oh, that. The one I'm talking about is also called single family revolving home. It's $79,000.
So if you don't spend it and it's just kept there and it's not used this year, can it be used the next year? It can.
The one I'm talking about, I don't know what this $7,000
is. I'm not asking about a renewal. I'm just saying what happens to the money? It just sits there.
It didn't use it. Yeah,
but it can only be used for this program.
The one I'm talking about, yes. They renewed our contract. Next year, so we still have the money.
So if it's 2 or 3 years and you build it up, then maybe you help more people after 3 years or something. I don't know. She just said that this one wasn't being renewed.
Yeah,
the
I don't
single
know
what, family home revolving.
Yeah,
program.
That's through the weatherization program.
Okay, so that's.
I think that's the one and it came through the Olean Walker. It with the critical housing repair. Those were ones that we just started this year.
Okay.
But you know, I'm not sure which.
Yeah, so what you're talking about is.
Okay.
I don't know what that is.
Thank
sorry.
You.
It's
the same age.
So what I'm trying to impart is it would be, I think, really good as a steering committee. I'd like to see if there's some consensus on this, that I think it'd be good to coordinate, you know, what grants aren't being used and make efforts to try to, I know this isn't the budget, but just before I forget.
One thing that I got Allison offline was we're hiring a new director for Pike County. And if they see something and he, you know, we'll have him take a deep dive into the budget. And if I asked Allison this, if we pass this budget today and the new director sees something that they want to change, can we change that? She said yes, correct?
Yes, we have the opportunity at mid-year to change that, and then that can be.
It wouldn't be until mid-year that could be changed.
Well, I think it.
I mean, it depends on the contract and the grant, but yes, a lot of things can be renegotiated or contract. You know, we have to work with our state contractors, but to look at where that is, and within the parameters of the contract, we can negotiate and talk to them about where we're at and how we would like to make changes with that.
And traditionally, we have mid-year, and we have, you know, we don't always do mid-year. And then we have the final budget, which is what we're going over today.
But even if that's traditional, we can change the budget at any time. So if we want to bring it up and say there's something else we need to change, that's acceptable.
As long as you open the budget.
Public hearing, and I'll think exactly know that
you have the proper. You could definitely review the budget more frequently than you want.
I'm not saying review it. I'm just saying if there's tweaks we need to make or something. Any other discussion on
this? Yeah, Allison, would you say that if there's a program that's not continued and we still have a balance there, can we just continue to take that down to zero?
It depends upon the contract. It depends upon the grant and that you're working within that grant.
Some grants allow for a carryover. Usually, typically, it's federal. So you typically state, the state portion of a contract will not allow carryover. It has to go back to the state. Mm-hmm. Federally, a lot of the federal grants, depends, and again, it depends on the program, the grant, will allow a carryover of up to a certain amount as it's negotiated in the grant itself or as they allow. Okay. So like, you know, aging, for example, we can carry over, I think it's 10% of our federal amount into the next year. Mm-hmm. So typically what we would do is draw down and spend down our state funds first.
Oh, sure.
And then use our federal funds.
That's smart.
Secondary.
So you're saying on this state contract, the single family home is a state contract.
So typically, again, yeah, so that hasn't been under my purview. But typically states, and it depends on the state grant. There are some that would allow that, but typically most state grants require, they will not allow a carryover unless for some reason they extend out your grant.
So you wouldn't be able to get, like we was talking, a renewal, and then next year they give us another $7,300 to boost the policy.
To boost that, unless they approve that and allow that. Yeah, it goes back unless they, under that specific grant and negotiations with a specific state contact, allows that. Otherwise, it goes back to the state. Typically, a lot of the funds we work with are general funds to the legislature, and so a lot of those go back into that general fund and then reallocated by the legislature.
So this $7,300
goes back to the legislature? Well, it depends on what.
But going back, if we haven't drawn, most of our grants are on a reimbursement basis. Mm-hmm. There are some state grants. There are some state grants, like the governor's office of planning and budget, that they give it up front. They give, like, out of 150, they'll give you 135, and then you keep a retainer.
Versus the reimbursement.
Yeah, but this, you know, if it hasn't been used, then it's not reimbursed, so we never had the money.
Most money doesn't come into our coffers ahead of time.
And you should be our expert on carry.
Yeah, on carryover and...
Yes, carryover.
Yes, carryover, yes.
Exactly.
Got it. My husband very much like that. I should have caught it.
So the final budget reflects, so like the decrease in the budget amount is going to reflect any grants that weren't worked in or that hadn't had, yeah. So that's where the decrease comes. At the very last pages there of the budget, there is a recap by program. So you can see that on page, well, it's not numbered the page, but it's right after 59, page 59. We have the approved budget, we have the final budget, and then we have the revision changes. And I marked some of the largest ones. Now heat was one of the largest ones. It was 92,000 in from budget to revision because of the LIHEAP funds from the state budget was cut during this year. And so we had to scramble a bit on that one. And then the Dixie MPO, their budget was down 50,000. And the largest one was that VITA grant, the IRS, Earn It, Keep It, Save It federal portion was 105 down. And then the street safety for all, we had $1 million budgeted plus 250. And that was a year ago, FY2024. Now the budget was 737. They completed that project without that additional reimbursement. Okay. So the net effect of everything, there were ones that were increased. So the net effect was the 413,000.
Mm-hmm. So. Can I ask you about ombudsman?
Yes.
Is that something that the ombudsman office is paid through by the county?
So the ombudsman in this particular instance is the long-term care ombudsman. And it comes out of the federal funding. They're advocating for your rights of seniors in long-term care facilities. Totally different than the ombudsman, than some of the other ombudsman programs.
But I just wanted to ask that question, like, where is that? Thank you, Chris.
Yes, so that's primarily federal. Yeah. Some state match comes through the Older Americans Act federally, and that's for advocacy and long-term care. Yeah, and you'll notice that like Veteran Directed increased quite a bit. We really increased our caseload with the Veteran Directed program, which is a program that helps veterans stay in their own homes. So we were able to increase our caseload on that quite significantly. But yeah, and we've tried really hard, I know, with specifically with aging, because that's what I've been most closely related with, and we're working with Heath and Cap on some things with grants. But one of the things I've always tried to do is make sure that at the end of the year, as we've got extra money, I'm reaching out to your county coordinators at your senior centers and talking about one-time equipment purchases, things like that, so that we don't leave money on the table.
Mm-hmm.
We do not want to let that money go back.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So back to the only other grant that was affected during the year. We already talked about the Hurricane Pantry. We had our own donation center for that. And then the Earn It, Keep It, Save It state portion. So it was, which is related to the VITA, the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance. And so that was closed during the year. And you can see those on each page for that. That. Which ones were closed? So any other questions?
I'll make a motion to approve the budget as proposed for
the final revision.
Yeah, for the revisions from 2025 and for the revisions for the fiscal year 2026 budget.
Okay.
We haven't
talked about the 26 yet, but this one's our FY 2025 final budget revisions. Then I have the 2025.
You just need a motion on that.
On the 2025.
Yeah. 25
okay. We have a second.
Awesome.
Is there any discussion on motion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thanks.
Okay, FY 2026 proposed budget. Okay, so we, the process that we go through for this is, I receive the budgets for, from each director in their department. Aging, Carrie gives me her budgets and everyone in their own departments. I came up with for our new FY 2026, we have 47 new funds going forward. And then I subtracted two from that because the state combined CIB and the local American administrator and the community planner, which had been three separate things. Now that's combined into one grant from the Governor's Office of Planning and Budget. And so that leaves us 45 funds, and then plus administratively, it's 46 funds. And, you know, we're at this point now, and we're waiting for, you know, Congress to appropriate and to do things. So we're waiting word on specific programs that we've seen in the news that have been, you know, on the new administration's budget to cut. But we've gone through that before, and we'll just see how it all falls out. So our budget, our final budget, which we just talked about, was $13,673,777, and the net change is downward $395,286 and to $13,278,490. A lot of that change that has affected the downward is weatherization funding was slightly less, about $100,000. The critical housing was not renewed. And then the street safety and the VITA. So it's the same issues that we had this year going forward. So,
Allison, are there programs under a particular budget? You said there's 45 categories or whatever you call it. Are there multiple programs under some of those or those individually?
For example, Carrie's aging has how many? Probably
20 something different funding sources. A lot of them are from one contract, so Division of Aging Adult Services with DHHS at Utah gets a lot of federal dollars that come down, so a lot of our contracts are under that, but then those funds are divided out so that we can track by program. For audit purposes, they require us to track that by program, by fund.
And you can see on the consolidated budget, there's it shows federal contracts, state contracts, other contracts, whatever they are, whatever they may be, in agency, like we have a donations, like I talked for the CAP programs, local participation, and that's from the counties, from all the different sources that are local participation, the towns and the MPO and such. And then project income and donations, and then our indirect revenue. And then we do have some carryovers.
And just as a note, the state contracts, a lot of that includes federal dollars because we call it a state contract. It's considered state because it's coming through the state. Mm-hmm. It's a pass-through, but a lot of that is federal funding.
Okay.
So if there's any question
about that, mm-hmm. the Medicaid, the state contract is page 5, 402.
Yes.
177 versus 187. Medicaid is slated to get.
Yes, and it should not impact, well, I shouldn't say it should not, it could impact. This particular program is a Medicaid waiver program,
right.
And it's through a 1915C waiver through the Medicaid office. So
what
yes.
does that actually serve?
So it serves, this particular one serves individuals 65 and older who meet nursing home level of care and have their services met in the home rather than going to a long-term care facility.
And are you aware if that's slated to be cut? Because right now,
it's not slated specifically to be cut. What might impact it is what happens with all the Medicaid cuts at the federal level and how
right.
the state decides to, how they're going to manipulate those
right.
cuts. Because this is, the 1915C is not considered necessarily discretionary, but it's a program that's not mandated, right? So they're going to have mandated programs that the state's going to have to fund under Medicaid.
Sure.
This could be one that could be cut if they get cut so much that they wouldn't. I have not heard.
It's like an add-on program.
They call them CDC waivers, and they have 7 or 8 of those in the state. Like there's an autistic waiver, a DSPD waiver,
correct.
A bunch of different ones. So I have not heard anything from our state level of any concern that that's going to be cut or that that's being considered. But again, until I think they know what happens federally at the Medicaid level and how the state's going to be able to look at that, because again, the state has to significantly match those Medicaid dollars, including the Medicaid waiver. So
everything's in a precarious
yes,
right
it is
now.
Definitely.
I mean,
yeah.
within that community, and I'm very invested in that community,
yeah.
the truth is there is nothing safe.
No.
So with anything that we get funding for through Medicaid, we probably need to take a good look at this because if this program specifically is meeting the needs of seniors.
Yes, to keep them at home.
They're very, very likely in trouble.
Yeah, it could be a vulnerable program.
Yeah.
Anyway,
just touch up on all that, everyone. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. I can look for it, but do we have a reserve that's just a line item that says reserve?
For each fund or for administration?
Yeah, for basically our function at the top, but before we get down to the funds.
Oh,
we have one.
I have some notes here, but it's not in the budget here, but I have the notes that I shared with you
mm-hmm.
before, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
That amount's pretty much the same.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Exactly. Well, not exactly, but yes, sir. Okay, so anything else?
Do you have any questions? Seeing none, I'll accept a motion.
Move to adopt fiscal year 2026 budget.
Second. Move and second. Any discussion on eligibility? Any more discussion? If not, all in favor of you?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Me? Thank you very much. So we'll move to item number 5, Town of Apple Valley Master Plan with Impact Fee Facilities, Plan Community Impact Board application. Cool.
Is from the Town of Apple Valley. We're going to update the Impact Fee Facility Plan. With CIA,
The way the plans, finding grants work, it's basically a $50,000 grant for now, and GMB comes up to $50,000. So what Apple Valley wants to do is, they've got some growth, they've got a plan, somebody's looking in, so they want to make sure that their impact fees are on par with the state's. So they want to do an update to their impact fees plan. So that's what we're going to go to the CIP for you.
That actually just goes to staff, not
yeah, it does need the board. It does need to go to the board. Yeah. As long as they check all the boxes, the staff can do that.
And I'm going from memory here, but is that a one-to-one match?
Yeah. They can do up to 100,000 without more.
So what are they asking for, though?
50,000.
50, okay.
So 50,000 from CIB.
Okay, thank you.
And it's for every impact or for water?
They're doing
through the district.
They're doing
their own city, but the water district's kind of taken over. So is it only their city?
Yeah, they're doing, what they're trying to do is they're looking at public safety, storm drainage, transportation, showports, and renovations.
If they don't have transportation, doesn't that go to the county automatically?
Well, they're looking more at roads and streets.
Okay.
It's inside of them. That's what they're transporting.
Okay.
This is the roads and the streets.
Okay. All right.
Not transit or anything.
Changes all that.
Yeah. That's going to cost them basically $1,000 per resident? No. They have 910 residents. Somebody do the math for me. And they're asking, and they're needing to spend $100,000.
I cannot imagine an impact fee study costing $100,000.
Oh, they cost so much more than that.
Well, our city spent way less than that on impact fee studies per fee. And so I'm just saying, I'm wondering.
But this is a master plan. Right?
Yeah, it's a master plan is a little different. I guess the general plan. Okay. All right.
So it's a little more involved.
And they're a big area, so.
I'm sure it will cost all of
We need a vote to support.
Just a motion to support. You can support, make your or reject. It's basically how it works with Seattle.
Okay.
So,
can I ask a question? Yes.
Yeah,
I mean, this is in Washington County, right? What's Washington County feel like?
Apple Valley needs to up their impact fees because they have a huge development.
Are they in the city?
They are. They're a town. They're incorporated, but they're like 910. Yeah, they don't have. They are. They're incorporated. Yeah, they have a lot. They are growing. The last issue. The area is growing. Do they have water? Have those subdivisions already? Have those subdivisions already pulled their permits though? Well, if so, it's too late to do it. That'd be, I think, well, their work. No, right now it's just a projection.
What they've got initial.
Hmm.
And the scope is in projection.
Water is our town.
There is some big developers over there that.
Oh, yeah. They have platted, but they don't have entitlements because they don't have impact. I mean, they don't have the infrastructure in.
Yeah.
And so until the developer brings that infrastructure, they can't pull a permit.
Which is why they need to
do. That's why they need to
do. Yeah. So they can pull a building. Do impact things so they can.
Yeah.
Impact fees are very tricky.
They are.
And they can't just guess.
It's almost like the cart before the horse. If you don't have it, then how do you put the water sewer? And then some of these are regional, and so they can't even do some kind of a reimbursement for that. So they need to have this study.
Well, I know this is on the record. Let me just say it. I don't care. Apple Valley is like the 12-year-old that says, Mom, Dad, I'm leaving. I can do this on my own. They're now 17 and coming back and saying, actually, I need some help. So this is probably a noteworthy effort. So they're not guessing, and small towns usually guess high and then they have to reimburse when they get sued.
Because they didn't spend it in their 6 years and follow the state law.
Exactly.
That's the problem. So they really do need this.
Okay. Any other questions?
No.
Seeing none, do I have a motion for someone to support this project, for this application?
Hey, women are fine. The neighboring town, I will make a motion for the town of Apple Valley to work on their master plan with impact fees, facility plan, community impact board applications that they can be approved to work on their impact fee. And
for 50, do we have to put an $50,000?
No more than $50,000.
Just ask.
I'll submit it. Second.
Please move it. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? Thank you. All right. We'll go to number six, Glendale Town Well Replacement Community Impact Board Application.
So Glendale has a well that the casing is cracking, and the pieces are falling into the water. We've got a lot of issues. So they're going to go to CIBD and try and get a new, they need a bunch of people. So.
Kane County here. Move to support.
Sure.
There's some issues.
Oh no.
And I need to discuss, but I still think you're going to support. What happened was Glendale didn't get on the CIB list. They thought they had funding through USDA and now funding fell through.
Yeah.
So they're coming as special consideration.
Like I can just say from firsthand knowledge that they have been working on this for a very long time. Their resources are extremely limited. And I mean, they're truly in a place of need, and it's not for lack of working on it that they're needing help.
Yeah. Their funding did fall through. They thought they had funding through USDA, so they didn't think they need to come to CIB. And so that's why it's not.
So would this be one of those emergency?
It's called special consideration.
Well, and WASH is so critical. It's not like you can say, never mind.
Glendale's like that 14-year-old that I have no idea.
I went out to the site with the mayor.
No, it's
the well. There's a picture here, and you can see they've got big old blobs of silicone. Is there, well, that's cracked.
So what would the obligation be? The $900,000?
They're asking for
20% for 30 years?
They're asking for an $810,000 grant, a $90,000 loan, 1% for 30 years. I don't know why, but that's what they're going to ask for. And then I go to the board, and the board can work with them on that.
So is this one of the emergency type things where it comes off the next year? Or
no, it's only the reason it's special consideration to go in as a regular application.
And yeah. The
board has to vote to hear
something. Or do you run it through the tool?
Yeah, they're a little off on it, but they're pretty low on funds, so there'll be something where it will happen.
Yeah. When you say a little off on it, like
they could probably take about another 1,000. So not it's a pretty small project. It's 900,000 when you consider $10 million grant federal. You know, yeah, it's pretty small.
I was there. We already produce the oil. We want to spend
the money. Kane County does produce. You know, they produce. They're the 10th largest producer in the state. They do produce. They don't produce like you in
the
county.
They're the 60-year-old that says, we make the money.
You bring up a good point. They would produce, Kane County would produce, probably would be one of the highest producers they were fighting to. If they touched the pole in Kane County, we wouldn't hear so much out of Uinta County anymore if that was the case.
I know.
Our hands are tied in Kane and Garfield and these areas.
Yeah.
So. Thank you for the support.
But it is a necessary project, and I would fight for it if I could. So.
I call the question.
Yeah, is that a motion?
Well, I made a motion.
Oh, you did? I'm sorry.
And I second it.
Okay, motion by Celeste and second by Carol Sherwood. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Thank you.
And thank you.
Appreciate it, Cody.
Thank you.
Cody Davis.
We'll go to number 7, congressional staff updates. Cindy, are you on?
Oh, I don't know.
Did we lose her?
Oh, she's
on. She might
have
been. She's muted.
Is she the only one that we have for so far?
I'm trying to unmute myself. Give me just a second.
We can hear you.
Peter, can hear you.
Okay,
hear
then I'll just talk. Things are good with Rep. Loy. We are starting appropriations markup, so it is very busy. We did get really good news, and Commissioner Taylor can attest that we have worked very hard to get the Army Corps to work with the Forest Service and get approval of the repair of the Panguitch Lake Dam, and we heard on yesterday that was approved and the permit is on its way. They are going to open the bid for that next week, the irrigation company. And other than that, just if there's anything you need from our office, please reach out. As most of you know, we did have a public lands amendment to the Big Beautiful Bill that was pulled out at the last minute. I don't know if Gary's there and he can speak to what Senator Lee is doing, but he is trying to put something in on the Senate side. His is a little bit different. We had only parcels that had been requested from either the county, the city, or the Water Conservation District. And so it was definitely focused on infrastructure and the needs for, you know, local municipalities or counties. But that was taken out. So we're looking at other ways that we can help, not just Washington County. There was a little bit of Beaver in there as well, but not just those counties, but other areas. And that's it. If you have any questions, otherwise I'm done.
Hey, Cindy.
Yes.
I heard from the Congresswoman that there was quite a bit of, there's like some fishing and angling, publications that are kind of environmentalist leaning that got a lot of hunters riled up apparently, and they were real worried about that this is going to be taking away some of their hunting and fishing grounds. And what I heard the Congresswoman saying is no, in fact, that the truth of it is these were lands that are right smack dab in the middle of a municipality or what have you. No one's
roadside easements.
Yeah. And I guess I'm just bringing it up so you can affirm that that's the case. And for everyone that's here, you know, all of us are in the public eye, and maybe if this comes up again or in the meantime, we can start building awareness, I guess, public awareness of the issue.
Yeah, some of those NGOs did a really good job at making it, you know, vilifying the bill. It was not, I guess some hunter might want to go across this, but they, like Gil said, they were road easements, power easements, pipeline easements. There was a portion for a reservoir. Most hunters and fishermen like reservoirs, you know, that gives them more opportunity to recreate. And Blue Ribbon Coalition did a really good job addressing some of that in one of their videos. But yeah, that's why I bring it up. Even though it's been pulled out, we are looking at it, but we want people to be aware it is not, it's not going to stop public access to anything that anyone really want to go on. And, you know, a road easement, I guess the county could close that off, but that I don't think is their intention, but it's not like it's places that you think people are going to want to recreate anyway.
Yeah, that was another one that I heard, you know, on Facebook, which is the most reliable source, is that
yeah, I'm a French model.
That they were going to lock up just that one piece, and it was not a big deal, but it was, you know, a gateway to a ton of other public land that suddenly no one would be able to access.
Yeah, and that's just incorrect.
Right. And so ironic, because the very NGOs that were saying this are the ones that are constantly trying to lock up the land. And then to be like, they're going to lock up our land. It was just...
Yeah.
So that's the point. They tell you what they do, and they blame you for doing what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So crazy. Well, Cindy, her proposal was amazing, where she was trying to help with all the infrastructure needs that we have for water, power, sewer, and all of the reservoirs, the things that she's working on. So we support her in doing that and want to continue to move forward, even though we're kind of shut down on that effort. But we need to continue, because having easements matter for us to be able to move forward with infrastructure in our communities.
Yeah. Thank you, Mayor Billings. Thank you. And the same thing with, you know, Penguin Lake.
I'm talking with the most right now. It's insane.
All right. Cindy, thank you.
Cindy, Commissioner Taylor has a question for you.
Yes.
Yeah. Cindy, I just want you to know our representative is doing a wonderful job. I was on her town hall call the other night. She had 8,000 people listening in on the call, and I thought she took every question that came her way, answered them wonderfully, and I really appreciate that. Also, she's working on another project for us back there. And at 1:29 this morning, I got a text from our representative Malloy, with some help on that, which would have been 3:30 her time. I want you to know, you can let her know I appreciate how hard she works for at least me and my county.
Yeah,
I will pass that along.
Yeah. Any other questions, sir?
She's working on some NRCS for Shepherd. We're waiting for the Congress and Senate to approve it, but we're in our third leg of an irrigation expansion, which we built the settling pond. They're almost finished, and our trunk lines, now we need it to go to the farms, and that's the one that hasn't been funded, so I know she's aware. So it's Senator Curtis, so we're trying to make sure that we get the funding. Doesn't help unless it gets to the farm. Yeah.
We are working, and we are working on some tariff issues and working for some sheep issues that in Stephanie's other life she has been working on, and Commissioner Cousins is also very well aware of that issue.
Thanks. She's our champion. She's our sheep champion. In fact, regionally, she's the one with what we've been able to see, the greatest access and the greatest sort of influence into the White House. If you're not aware, the sheep industry is on the brink of collapse, and it's simply a bellwether, the situation of what will happen will be. It's not simply food security. It's an issue of national security, and Representative Malloy has been our champion. And so... Anyway,
Just a shout out to Stephanie. She's really taking this cause, and I mean, her family's in this business, but
she doesn't get any money.
She doesn't get paid. But she's really been a great advocate for this issue. So kudos to you.
Eat
my own wall. For the sheer enjoyment.
Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you.
Thanks, Cindy. Appreciate it. State agency updates. Do we have something from the Workforce Services?
What are you guys thinking?
Just come up here, we can see you. Awesome. Thank you.
It's good to be here.
Remind us your name.
Amy Drash. Yep. I'll try not to trip. And I'm glad I'm far away. We're coming to a close with funding, as many of you are, with the fiscal year end. So we're working on allocation for funding. So hopefully by next month we'll have a little bit more TANF and different funding outsource updates for you. But as far as workforce development, unemployment is trending downward because it's summertime. So a lot of our seasonal,
our seasonal occupations help that unemployment rate. So Iron County itself is around 2.7%, Washington 3.2%. As a state, we're at 3.2%, so we want to just try to stay with that or under. National average is 4.1%. So Utah as a whole is doing really well.
Yeah. For Scarfield.
I'm not going to talk.
No, we are going to talk about the Scarfield because we're making it a priority with the governor's rural affairs.
You know what?
And in fact, I'd like to have you in on our conversation.
Yeah, I would love
when we do that.
I actually just got to spend some awesome time in Tropic in the last couple of weeks.
And well, you're right on the edge of heaven when you get there.
It was that for me. Garfield's always a little higher because it's all seasonally driven. So it's about 7% right now, 7.1%.
But that's 7% during the good time.
Yes, that is an average. That is an average. So we're looking at it, and we look at it quarterly right now. And with Garfield County, we expect that to go down, especially this summer.
And what's funny is we have businesses, I know in Escalante, Tropic, Panguitch, that are begging for employees, and yet we have the highest unemployment rate. So we need to work something out.
We talked about that a lot a couple of weeks ago when I was there, and just trying to get creative with workforce needs because it is, we know what it's hard. So yeah.
Amy, can you help me understand how they calculate this? Like, are these moms that are staying home that are calculated into that number that are not working?
No, these are just active claims that people are actually
saying they're trying to work, but they don't have a job.
Exactly. Yep. So population is obviously what's happening. This is just claims that are coming into the underlying system.
Yeah, some of them are lying. Some of them aren't trying to get a job.
We see that.
And I have a teacher apply for a job in our city, and he sets an interview, and they don't show up.
Yeah.
So they just are not. They're just telling you they're reaching out and applying, but they're not getting. I'm trying to do the job.
Yeah, it is rough, and especially with, we see that a lot seasonally because they know they have a potential guaranteed position that's going to come back, so they just kind of bide their time. So they'll stay in the radars.
I was in interviews yesterday for many hours, but we had 5 quality applicants for our street superintendent.
Nice.
Which was very encouraging to find 5 quality people that were like actually qualified people. I love that. And you've got people that are qualified, but they all had jobs.
Yeah.
They were coming in, to better themselves.
But no, we see that in-house as well. I've been with the Department of Workforce Services for over 19 years, and what the benefits were 19 years ago as opposed to what we're able to offer now is just drastically decreased.
Yeah.
So we see it just as much as anywhere else. So it's hard. It's hard. But when we get quality candidates that come in, we do everything we can to retain them. But it's rough retention and probably the hardest part for us right now. So,
Amy, we've had some people recently. We opened up a position in the county, and we had 55 applicants. 51 of them came from Indeed, and they were all stupid.
That is a... So that's Luke's specialty. Because we try to keep everything in-house at jobs.utah.gov. If we start outsourcing to Indeed, we have no control over what you guys are seeing and what's coming through your pipeline. And that's a norm for...
I mean, it was almost like, well, we need an equestrian director. And they drew a picture of a horse with a crayon. Come on. You don't qualify.
Yeah, we try to funnel that a little bit when the job postings are coming for us. But Indeed, we provide programs next month.
It was a crayon.
They did get brown.
They used brown.
They used the right color. Mm. So we're going to give some points for that, right? Okay. Couple other things we're doing. Just this morning, in partnership with SGU and Fervo Energy, we're trying to get an apprenticeship program off the ground for Fervo, so we are working closely with them. They really are pushing in-house recruiting, and so they want at least 5 people directly from Beaver County to do this apprenticeship program for the power plant operator. So we're trying to navigate what that looks like for Beaver County right now. We're in the very early stages of getting that going, but hopefully by the fall we have really solid apprenticeship program for them that we can get local and not bring people from everywhere else to that. So geothermal houses in big right now, and we're also thinking about it. So another fun thing, and I consider this really fun, is we're trying to bring back, in partnership with Military and Veterans Affairs, we're trying to bring back a resource fair that used to be in Iron in Washington County. It all got shifted during COVID up to Salt Lake, and we're trying to bring it back to our house. So in partnership with them and Mike Miller, we're working really hard to get a resource fair. We're going to start here in Iron County. We're shooting for 9/11 to do that actual event. And we're going to do it at Southwest Tech, and that will be for veterans. It will be for family members, anybody. And it's not just job-related. It will be resource-related, banks, funding, thing, anything that we think that could help better their lives. We're trying to bring that back. Yeah.
So that's right around the day of service?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, we're trying to, we haven't landed on that date yet. That's what we're shooting for. A lot of this is student-driven with SUU, and then we're shooting for 2026 to bring it to Washington County. We're just trying to get it out of Wasatch Front and get it down here. So that's our main goal.
I'm sure Dixie Tech will open up whatever you need for that there.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah, okay. We don't have dates for, we're shooting for spring because we want to do it before graduation in May. So we're hoping for early spring for Washington County. So that would.
I mean, I know Henry's online.
Yeah.
Utah Tech's fine too, but we're graduating a lot with jobs, and it only is logical that they have something like that available.
Yeah.
Just like you do with Cedar.
All right, still going. Fun updates. We continue to work with Utah Mine, Milford Mine. Milford Mine has done a few mining events just across the street over at our office to try to take some offset of those jobs that are being transitioned. So they've been awesome to work with us, but there's a couple on our meeting. So any other questions?
Good job.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, you're welcome.
Are there any other state agencies here? Doesn't look like it is. Henry, I think you're up. I don't see anybody from SU. Is there anyone here from SU? Go ahead, Henry.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thanks, steering committee, for letting me join you for a few moments. I think I ought to start with the most exciting news. Since we last spoke, President Shane Smead has started his tenure at Utah Tech. He's been on campus since May 1st. Fun enough for him, May 1st happened to be our commencement. So he had in his first 36 hours, 4 commencement ceremonies that he led and spoke at. And I think that was a pretty neat experience both for him and the campus community. A few notes about our commencement exercises that I pulled, or maybe more specifically, a few notes about our graduating class from this past year. We graduated over 3,000 students. The gender breakdown was interesting, 62% female, 38% male. That's a trend we continue to see. 28% first-generation students, which is something we're proud of, 72% from Utah, and 41 states represented. So exciting time of year to graduate students and move them into the workforce and hopefully into successful lives. Back to President Smead, he's hit the ground running. He's met with, I think, many of you already. He's engaging in a community tour around Washington and Kane County, which is our service area. He's already had dozens of meetings with community leaders. We're going to continue to do that for months and years. We'll make sure that you all have the opportunity to hear from him. He'll be joining this group in the August steering meeting to introduce himself, answer some questions, and share some thoughts about his vision for the university. And then maybe one final note, and I may have mentioned this in the past, but President Smead is moving forward with a new strategic plan for the university. That's a multi-month process to create that plan with a ton of stakeholder involvement from elected officials, campus community leaders, and really everyone gets a seat at that table. So that process has been kind of soft launched during the summer. It will really get going in the fall, and then hopefully we'll have a new 5-year plan in place by next spring. So a lot of positive momentum and change at the university, and happy to answer any questions or be of help in any way I can.
Awesome.
Any questions for Henry? Henry Park, thanks, Henry. Good job.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. SU, still on here from SU. Good.
Chairman?
Yes.
Dixie Tech also had their graduation. 990 graduates, 500 attended commencement, and most of them had jobs. The nice thing about it was 168 of the graduates were also still in high school and wore that blue and white tassel. And so as they came through, I was saying, well, what persuaded you? I shook every hand, and then then they had a dunk tank of hand sterilant that you could just whole body. Anyway, they all said, I want to get a start in a profession. And they're still in high school. So I was impressed by that.
That's awesome. That's great. Thank you. Okay. Local affair discussions. Is there anything else they've been up to bring up? Next meeting, August 6th this year. Well, I'm going to make an alternative if you're the chair and I'll work for helping to keep this meeting to an hour.
Oh, we're not done.
But we need to go into a closed session. Mayor Ferguson's going to make that motion.
I'll make that motion.
Cite the appropriate code.
Appropriate code 52-4-205183.
So we'll move into closed session. We'll invite those just down the steering committee to stay. But
everybody, you want a second?
Second.
All right.
You have a second in all favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.